Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Happy Halloween, everyone, and welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn, and we've had a lot of content shared in the podcast here in the past week, so I thought I would lighten it up a little bit and combine my Thursday episode with Free for All Friday because it's Halloween, and because it's Halloween and I enjoy things that are a bit spooky-ooky, I figured for this year on the podcast for Halloween, I would share with you some stories of creepy urban legends, things that gave me the heebie-jeebies, maybe they give you the heebie-jeebies, and we'll get the shivers together. When I read a story with my son, with Matthew, and now with Thomas, now he enjoys these stories, there's a great anthology of stories called Frog and Toad. And they're so funny. Like, it's about these two friends, Frog and Toad, and, you know, they get in these little adventures and things like that. And there's one where they just are written in a strange, ironic kind of way. There's one where they are trying not to eat too many cookies so they don't get sick. And so they take the cookies and they box them up and they put them away. Like, no, we don't have willpower. We don't have willpower. We're going to eat them. And then Frog goes and gives the cookies to the birds. And it's like, great. You know, well, we don't have cookies, Toad says, but we have willpower, Frog says. And Toad says, forget that. I'm going home to bake a cake. So I love that. But one of them, Frog, tells a scary story to Toad about the dark Toad, the dark Frog. And I love the ending of the story. It's great to share with little kids that he tells like this scary story. They're by the fireplace and they both sit and the little teacups they're drinking from are rattling. And it says they had the shivers. It was a good, warm feeling. And sometimes we feel that when we hear a little scary story and we're by the fire or, you know, we're drinking our little tea and it's dark and we're just listening to that. And I think it's really fun. And in fact, I took the kids around driving a few nights ago just to look at spooky Halloween decorations in the car. And we got out and we walked around and seen a few. But as we drove in the car, I just put on just some music from the Haunted Mansion just to add from Disneyland to add that kind of atmosphere. So here, let me play that for you right now. And then it goes on, and then it actually turns into Grim Grinning Ghosts, and we were singing along to that. But I like that. Just a little bit of spookiness in life, I think, is can be a good thing. Not everyone's into it, and that's fine. I respect people who, that's not what I need right now, and that is A-okay. But today, Halloween, might be appropriate to share with you. Let's see, what do I have here? I have seven, the count from Sesame Street. There are seven creepy urban legends that I have to share with you. So why don't we start with those creepy urban legends that give you the heebie-jeebies, the oogie boogies. Number one I have to share is one that scared my wife for the longest time when she was first told this as a kid. And maybe you were told this as well. She started sharing with me a few nights ago, and I was being such a little punk. She starts telling the story, and I said, oh, you mean it ends like this? Yeah, I'm such a punk so much. I love you, dear. Glad you're a faithful listener to the podcast. So I'll start the story with you. I'm not going to be a punk about it. So here's the story. There's a young girl. She's at home and she's alone for the first time. Her parents have gone away for the evening and she gets to stay there by herself for the very first time. They're like, oh, you're okay. You've got your dog here to protect you. And, you know, a trusty dog to keep watch and everything should be okay. So she's still nervous and she goes around the house and she locks all the doors and the windows and, you know, she thinks everything's fine. She doesn't want to go into the basement though because it's way too scary down there, but she locks everything up and she thinks, you know, everything's fine. And then during the middle of the night, her eyes open and she hears this dripping coming from the bathroom and she's like, oh, well, what is that? And, you know, she's too scared to even get up. She doesn't want to get out of bed. So she puts her hand over the side of the bed and she feels her dog licking her hand. She knows, oh, I'm okay. That's good. And then the next morning she wakes up and goes in the bathroom and opens the shower curtain and the dog is hanging from the shower head and has been killed. And the blood writes on the on the bathroom mirror, humans can lick too. So, I could see how if you're like a teenage girl, you know, you would, you know, or even like a younger girl, like younger kid, like, ah, You know, that's and it's macabre and disturbing, to be sure. So that one's called The Licked Hand, The Doggy Lick, or Humans Can Lick Too. Online it says it's an urban legend popular among teenagers. Like many urban legends, it has several versions and has been found in print as early as February 1982 in the story Bedtime for Sam by D.B. Martin. What's interesting, though, with this story is that there are a few precursors to the story that differ in relevant ways but have kind of that same twist. The most interesting one is a 1919 story, The Diary of Mr. Pointer by M.R. James. Now, in this story, a young man is petting his dog while he's reading a newspaper account about the death of a young student. Some guy, you know, has been he's obsessed with his own hair, and he's been going around killing people. And it's this kid who's just like obsessed with his hair, and he's like this killer. And the guy sits in his chair and he's petting his dog while reading this story. But it turns out the creature he's petting is not the dog. So it was the creepy hair obsessed kid sitting next to him that he thinks he's petting the dog, but it actually isn't. So, all right. So that's creepy urban legend number one. Feel free to write also. Go to trendhornpodcast.com. One, if you want to support these episodes, keep them coming. Help us to bring on wonderful guests, to reach out to others, and to eventually expand the podcast, because I want to get this as an app that has the full study series on it. You can access that as bonus content at trendhornpodcast.com. Or you can go there and leave a comment. Maybe there's an urban legend I missed that really freaked you out as a kid. I'd love to hear about it. Go to trendhornpodcast.com to leave a comment there. And so the first one is The Licked Hands. I want to go through just the famous creepy urban legend. So number two, the one that shows up time and again, you can't forget this one. And that's going to be The Killer in the Back Seat. Now, there was a film back in the late 90s, Urban Legend, and it was about a person who is a serial killer that kills people based on these old urban legends. Spoiler alert, it's not a great film, but it has a really cool opening sequence where this woman, it's raining, and she pulls into a gas station, and this like creepy guy comes up to the window, and he's like looking at her. He's like, "You need gas?" And she's like, "Yeah." So he goes and pumps her gas. When I was growing up, by the way, you know, you always hear these things like, "You better try hard in school, otherwise you're going to grow up and pump gas for a living." Now, unless you lived in New Jersey or Oregon, you had no idea what that meant. Like, you want to grow up pumping gas for a living? I'm like, what does that mean? Like, I always drive my car to the gas station and fill it every day because I want to? I don't get it. Because there used to be a time where gas stations were fully attended and there was a guy who would come out and fill up your tank. We don't have that anymore. It's self-service, except in, I think, Oregon and New Jersey still have laws mandating you can't pump your own gas. I think that's the case. If you live in those states and that's changed now, feel free to let me know. But so it has a gas station attendant. He's filling her gas, and then he comes out. This is the movie version. And he says, he's like, he has a stutter and he's creepy looking. He's like, they won't take your card, your credit card. Can you talk to them on the phone, the credit card company? And so the lady goes into the gas station and she sees that the guy locks the door behind him, and she picks up the phone and the phone is dead. He hasn't been talking to anyone. And she's like, leave me alone. Stop it. Don't. He's like, wait. And he like reaches out to grab her, and she breaks through the window. And she gets out of the wind, you know, she jumps through the window, gets back in her car, barely in the nick of time, and she pulls away. And the guy tries to overcome his stutter, and he finally says, "There's somebody in the back seat." And then she goes, "Bleh," and then the killer gets her. Now, in the traditional telling of the killer in the back seat story, what happens is there's a woman who's driving, and there's a guy following her in a car, and he's flashing his high beams over and over. He keeps flashing his headlights, and she's freaked out, and he won't leave her alone, and she thinks he's trying to kill her. So she like drives to a police station or to her home, and her parents come out to greet her, and the guy gets out of his car, and she's like, "That guy's trying to kill me." And the guy says, "No, the guy in the back seat, he's trying to kill you. I kept flashing my high beams so that he wouldn't attack you. Every time he would get up, I'd flash my high beams." And there's the killer in the back seat of the car. Now, of course, this is a legend. This never actually happened. There is a situation, though, that now it seems to go all the way back to 1967, according to an article on Snopes. But I think it got a lot of traction after it appeared in an Ann Landers advice column in 1982, that somebody wrote it saying, "Well, this happened to my friend, so be careful if somebody is flashing their high beams at you. They may be trying to let you know that." But according to Snopes, though, here's something interesting. The story appears in 1967, but it could be based on a real-life account in 1964. Here's what happens. Research shows that one true case of the killer in the backseat did occur in 1964 in New York City, when an escaped murderer hid in the backseat of a car. The car, ironically, belonged to a police detective who shot the man. Though the differences between the legend and the true occurrence are vast, it's not a lone woman, it didn't happen at night, there's no third person, the legend may have sprung from out of this real incident. So, the warning is, it's supposed to say what you think could be it is a common theme in urban legends, that what you think might be a danger is not, and the real danger is hidden and turns out to surprise you. All right, number three, the call is coming from inside the house. So this one has a lot of different variations, and it goes all the way back to the 1960s. In fact, a lot of these urban legends date from the 60s. And I think the reason was that we come up with urban legends as cautionary tales to try to put moral guardrails up to keep people from misbehaving. That's where a lot of urban legends come from. And so the 1960s was a time of rebellion. You had Woodstock, the sexual revolution. And so people are testing boundaries and limits. So it makes sense that people would start to tell these stories in the 60s to try to put up these moral guardrails that start to be lost. So one of them is, in the 60s, you have a proliferation of, babysitters that are being hired and parents wanting to strike it out on their own and get away from their kids more often. There's a lot of urban legend stories about babysitters, and a lot of them deal with young women in dangerous situations. Take from that commentary what you will. So this one's, the call is coming from inside the house of the babysitter and the man upstairs. There's a girl watching the kids. They're downstairs watching television. She keeps getting a phone call, and there's a heavy voice breathing on the other end. And eventually she's like, who is this? And he won't say. He's like, have you checked the children? Oh, normally, the babysitter is downstairs watching TV. The kids are upstairs sleeping. Have you checked the children? And then eventually she calls the police, and they're like, oh, well, keep him on the line for 60 seconds and we'll trace the call. And she's able to do that. And then the police call back and they say, the call's coming from inside the house. Get out. And then she hears the footsteps coming down the stairs, and that's the end of the story. And so there's a lot of different ways it's told. Sometimes the babysitter rescues the children and the guy gets arrested by the police. Sometimes the babysitter is either killed, it's alluded to that she's killed, or she's killed at the end of the story. And there's all kinds of different variants. The most unsettling one for me, variant of this story, is there's a babysitter and she is at home with the kids and she's freaked out. There's like all these weird baby dolls in the house and it's just a creepy house. And in the corner, there's like a life-size statue of a clown. And she's like, I really can't stand babysitting kids in this house. And so the kids are upstairs and she's like, oh gosh. And the parents call like, how's everything going? She says, oh, it's fine. She's like, this house just kind of makes me nervous. They said, why? She's like, well, do you really need to have a full-grown statue of a clown in your living room? She says, we don't have a full-grown statue of a clown in our living room. And then, of course, it's a serial killer dressed as a clown who's been frozen there. And then he springs to action and bleh, that's the end of the story. So you're like, Trent, stop it. Freaks me out. You're triggering my coulrophobia. Coulrophobia is a real illness, the fear of clowns, because clowns, they hide their identity and their pale makeup reminds us of someone who is sickly and dead. And so it triggers a natural instinctive reaction for us to beware of strangers and beware of someone who may be diseased or harmful to us. So coulrophobia, real disease, dude. Tell your friends, coulrophobia, anonymous, all get together and talk about how we only go to Burger King, not McDonald's. We'll take that creepy Burger King any day of the week over Ronald McDonald. So, I don't think I have coulrophobia, but I do have a minor apprehension to the way clowns are. I'm like, it's okay, Chuckles, you can let it go. So actually, the call coming from inside the house, the killer is hiding inside the house. There is an earlier real life reference to that point in the story. It's called the Hinterkaifeck incident. And it took place in 1922 in Germany in a small farmhouse outside of Munich. This is a real story. So there's a farmhouse called Hinterkaifeck in Bavaria, southern Germany, 1921, belonged to the Gruber family, and they started hearing these strange noises in the house. This is a true story. And they think the house is haunted, like items start disappearing, and they feel like a strange presence. And eventually the maid quits, and in March 31st, 1922, the new maid arrives And that is the last she has ever seen, and that's the last that the family has ever seen. Over the next 4 days, people stopped by the house for the Gruber family, but no one could raise the alarm. Finally, after 4 days, someone wandered into the barn and found the bodies of the Gruber family. The maid and the small child were in the main farmhouse, had been killed, and someone had been hiding in the house for months in the attic all this time. And Mr. Gruber was suspicious of this, but didn't act on it, because one day he went outside to clean up things and he noticed footprints leading up to the back door from the woods, but no footprints leading away. And so the guy had been hiding in the house that entire time. So, I mean, it's a ghastly thing. This really did happen. And so there are ghastly things that do happen in this world, but of course we shouldn't let that take our peace. Of course, we should always pray for peace and goodwill towards all people, but sometimes we dabble in the dark to appreciate the light a little bit more. Turning away from that, this is more of a silly urban legend. This one is the Polybius legend, Polybius. So, according to this urban legend, in 1981 in Portland, Oregon, the government installed arcade consoles that were just called Polybius. And it was part of a secret government experiment to see if people could be psychologically addicted to game consoles and they could addict people to playing games. Turns out that actually is true. The fact these games can be addictive to people. And so normally, though, the only nefarious thing you do from there is you have in-app purchases to drain people of their money when you get them addicted on games like that. So these Polybius arcade games were in these Oregon arcades in 1981 in Portland. And kids were getting addicted to playing them, and some of them would have seizures, and there were weird strobe lighting effects, so it put kids in trances and could hypnotize them. And people saw government agents, the men in black, you know, the G-men, black suits, black sunglasses, coming in, downloading information from the Polybius arcade game to see what it did to people, and then the government took them all away and hid it. Did this really happen? No, there's no evidence for it. The story was posted originally at coinop.org, an arcade fan website, February 6, 2000, and talked about Polybius occurring in 1981, but there's no other evidence that seemed to talk about it. It seems like the story was mostly made up, but there was an analysis that was done on it back, I think, Snopes was behind it, or Brian Dunning. Brian Dunning did a research on this. And what he said was that in the 1980s in Portland, Oregon, there were cases of the FBI investigating arcade parlors and kids getting sick. There was a kid who played Asteroids, the game Asteroids. Wonderful game, by the way. I played that on my Windows 95 all the time when I was, you know, in the sixth and seventh grade. He played Asteroids for 28 hours to break a world record, and he ended up getting sick. Another kid ended up having a seizure around the same time. So there were kids getting sick in the 1980s at Portland arcades, and the FBI was investigating these arcades, thinking some of the games were being used for underground gambling networks. So it could be the case that people conflated the stories. They saw the FBI going to arcades in the 80s and kids getting sick in the 80s from two different things, and they conflated it together, and that's what created the Polybius urban legend. All right, number five, The Candyman. So Candyman is a horror film from several years ago starring Tony Todd. I think he's like the ghost. I mean, I haven't seen it in the longest time. I think he's a ghost of a former slave who was lynched for having an affair or a romantic relationship with a white woman. And so he's sort of like Bloody Mary in the film, that urban legend where if you say his name three times in a mirror, he appears in the mirror and jumps out and attacks you and kills you. That's why, I mean, that's a common one also for other kids. It's like you say Bloody Mary three times in a mirror in the bathroom when it's dark and like, she's going to come out and get you. Once again, though, I err on the side of caution. For people listening, you know, don't engage in superstition of trying to like conjure up demons or ghosts or things like that, even if you think it's just a good joke. I know that I've been critical before of people who have tried to say, oh, Harry Potter is a cult. You're going to get, you know, automatically possessed by a demon if you read one of these books, which I don't think is the case. So I do think people can take fantasy literature or urban legends too far and do things like play a Ouija board or try to cast spells based on what they've seen in any fantasy literature to conjure up demons or ghosts. And, you know, so those are things you don't want to do. So I don't think, you know, don't tell your kids to play Bloody Mary in front of the bathroom mirror. Most of the case, because it'll just keep them up at night and it's going to annoy you. But there is a real life precursor that kind of is related to this, that, oh, they're going to come through the the mirror in your bathroom cabinet and kill you. I'll leave the link to this article. It's from a report, I think it's like from 1987 in the Reader, Chicago's free weekly magazine. Let's see here. It's written in very small font. I think it was a Friday, September 4th, 1987 in the Chicago Reader. And I'll link it to you. And this is about a true story. And man, they kind of overdid it a bit with the picture. They came in through the bathroom mirror, a murder in the projects. And so the picture is showing a guy whose hand is behind, you know, coming through the medicine cabinet mirror. And there's blood, and it's pretty gratuitous. I don't think you would see that today. Like, a lot has changed. And the byline says, Ruth Mae McCoy was the type who talked to herself and cursed strangers on the street. When she called 911 to report that someone was coming through the medicine cabinet of her Abbott Homes apartment, she might have been hallucinating. But she wasn't. And so the article goes on to say, what's crazy is this takes you back to the 1980s when things were messed up, man. Crime was at an all-time high in like New York, Chicago, all over the country. Really. People like think, it's so violent, gun violence, things have gotten so bad. When you look at crime statistics, actually things have gotten really good. Even in a place like Chicago, where there's still a ton of murders, it's gotten a lot better than what it was. So this is what it says here. So it says of McCoy, she lived in one of the 7 15-story brown Y-shaped towers named the Grace Abbott Homes, the most dangerous buildings in ABLA. A claustrophobe in a closet might be more at ease than a paranoid like McCoy in an Abbott high-rise. The buildings featured dark, malfunctioning elevators, pitch-black stairwells, and cocaine and PCP addicts on nearly every floor. Fiends really are lurking in the shadows here. In these towers, you're crazy if you're not always looking over your shoulder. And so it goes on to say, they're saying, you know, why did this matter so much? You know, it says project killings just aren't news ordinarily. CHA residents are blown away, knifed, and kicked to death almost every week, 2 or 3 times a week in warmer weather. But what made it creepy was that the killers got into McCoy's apartment because the walls between the apartments were incredibly thin, and so they broke through the wall and climbed through the medicine cabinet. The medicine cabinet was bolted into the wall, but it was big enough that they just burst through the wall and opened the medicine cabinet, the glass medicine cabinet, and just kind of climbed through that and then got into her bathroom. And it's crazy. The story says the police showed up and they heard the 911 call and they knocked on her door and she didn't answer. And there were like 4 police officers there. And they said, you know, we need to get in there. It's like, does anyone have a key? No, nobody has a key. And so I think one of the guys running this private security at the place said, well, look, you're going to get billed if you knock down that door. And so the police, they really said that. The police said, well, we don't want to get billed. So they left. Good work, guys. And then they came back the next day. Someone came in and found McCoy's body and surmised what happened and how the killers got in there. So sometimes truth is stranger and creepier than fiction. Number 6, the vanishing hitchhiker. This is a common one. That the story goes, someone's driving down the road and they pick up a young woman. Usually it's like a young woman, and they pick her up and she tells this sad, forlorn story. And they get to the place where she's supposed to be dropped off. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And then she's not in the car anymore. They're like, hey, where'd you go? And she leaves behind a scarf or a hat. And then they go up to the house and they say, hey, there was a young girl. I don't know where she went. She was trying to come here. And then the description or a picture in the house clues him in that it was actually a ghost and that girl had been killed in a car accident and never made her way home all those many years ago. So what's interesting is the vanishing hitchhiker story is a widely published story that comes about ever since horse and buggies were common, even before you get to automobiles. According to Wikipedia, public knowledge of the story expanded greatly with a 1981 publication of John Harold Brunvand's nonfiction book, The Vanishing Hitchhiker. In his book, Brunvand suggests that the story of the vanishing hitchhiker can be traced as far back as the 1870s and has, quote, recognizable parallels in Korea, Tsarist Russia, among Chinese Americans, Mormons, and Ozark mountaineers, end quote. Similar stories have been reported for centuries. across the world. So it's just one of those interesting, once again, you find it more as automobiles and horse and buggy carriages, you know, certainly as automobiles become more common and there are automobile accidents, as a way of understanding the new phenomena of meeting strangers on the road and giving them rides, and you never know what you're going to get when you meet these particular strangers. One element, though, of the story that you don't hear about a lot today is that a fair number of them, it's not a young woman who had died in a tragic accident. It is the ghost of an old woman who has died. But while she's driving in the car, she prophesies some kind of disaster that's going to happen, or that the end of World War II is near. And so it's a visit of a ghost who foretells the future. That's a less common variant of the Vanishing Hitchhiker story. And finally, number 7, I'm going to share with you these. I don't know if it's an urban legend, but it was from the anthology Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which was that book that you were terrified but intrigued by in your elementary school library. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I think Schwartz is the author of it. It's a good book to introduce kids to the horror genre. The stories are unsettling, but the illustrations, they are cray cray. Those illustrations, now they've actually changed the illustrations in later editions of the book because I think they were way too over the top. But like bloody monster scarecrows, creepy old woman coming through the door, the original illustrations, I don't care how old you are, those are high octane nightmare fuel. So if you don't want to sleep tonight, Google original Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark illustrations. The new ones, eh. They're fine. They're not really scary, though. And I think because they were keeping too many kids up at night. So I remember checking it out from the library being like, oh, man, I can't believe I'm reading this. Or I think I bought it once at a Scholastic book fair. I had saved up my $3 and it's like, oh, I'm going to finally read this. Oh, I'm old enough. And I read through it. There was one story in it that sticks out to me to this day. That it's almost like a good story you'd find in the Twilight Zone. Ooh, idea for Free for All Friday. I love Twilight Zone. I'm going to give you my top 5 Twilight Zone episodes here. Maybe if there's another spooky episode to require it, or, you know, a few months, I'll throw that in there. Here's the story. A little boy is going to the hospital for a procedure. And so they take him in and he gets a roommate. And the roommate is this other kid. So the kid's like 9 years old. And the other kid is a 9-year-old boy. And they have to share this room together. And the other 9-year-old boy is, he's out of it. He's being really weird. He keeps thrashing. They have to tie his arms down on the bed. And he keeps saying, like, I'm not Benjamin. I'm not Benjamin. I'm not Benjamin Rattley. You've got the wrong kid. I'm not Benjamin Rattley. He is. You've got it all wrong. Please let me go. It's not me. And they're like, what's wrong with him? And they said, oh, poor boy. He has a really bad infection in his foot. So they have to cut his foot off. And so he's like, okay. Then he falls asleep at night. And during the night, he thinks he sees the kid get up and move something around by his bed. And he's like, okay. And then the doctors come in and they take the main boy, the regular kid. And they say, okay, it's time to take you. We're so sorry what has to happen to your foot. And he's like, what are you talking about? They're like, oh, they pick up the file at the head of his bed that the other kid switched during the night. And he says, okay, Benjamin Rattley, we're going to go be a brave boy about this. He's like, I'm not Benjamin Rattley. He is. I'm not Benjamin Rattley. They're like, oh, well, we know. Yeah, we know. You're not Benjamin Rattley. Yeah, we know. And then they take him off and he sees the other boy smiling in the bed. So I'm like, ooh. Now, of course, you have to really suspend disbelief here, though. I mean, there have been some ridiculous hospital errors, though. My wife's a nurse. She could tell you that sometimes hospitals can get things wrong. Medical errors do kill and maim people, but it's a rare thing, but you should always check. So it's not that far out of the loop, but you have a lot of, like, you know, things that would have to go wrong for this to really happen. But I love just the setup of the story, the payoff. And as a kid, I did not see the twist coming. And so it has a good story structure, and it gives you a little bit of those shivers, those warm shivers. So I hope this was interesting to you. I gave you just a little bit of some creepy heebie-jeebie for Halloween. Have a happy Halloween, everyone. Stay safe. Don't overeat that candy, because this is the real thing to scare you tonight is, and this is what the candy will do to your gums and blood pressure. No! So that's the real thing to be afraid of tonight. So I hope you have a safe night and you have a blessed All Saints Day tomorrow, All Souls Day after that. Thank you all so much. And of course, I hope you have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.